Public relations works not only by controlling the content of media reports, but also by making sure that some voices are never heard. The marginalization of the Israeli peace movement in the American media is an example of how this works.
It's been the point of view of the Israeli peace movement for years that the fundamental cause of the conflict is the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land and the settlement policies. But that view is considered in the United States something that's extremely marginal, and that you rarely see that view put forward in the American media.
We, in the women's peace camp in Israel, organized a mass vigil of women in black and a mass march through the streets of Jerusalem, 2,000 women strong, both Israelis and Palestinians. Can you picture that dramatic moment? 2,000 women dressed in black marching down the streets of Jerusalem to the walls of the Old City, where we hung banners from the walls of the Old City saying peace in three languages, Hebrew, Arabic, and English. And guess what? It didn't get into the media.
That's not the kind of image that the media wants to create, because then all these images of Jews and Arabs working together, of Palestinians wanting peace, would create a kind of dissonance. It would contradict the message that the media has been giving us for years and years. Then how do you explain it? You can't explain it.
One of the many groups working for peace inside the occupied territories that has not received coverage in the United States is the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. The committee's work has attracted a range of Israelis committed to peace, including Israeli soldiers.
Our role is to go there and to rebuild Palestinian homes as a constructive way of resisting occupation. We're going to a Palestinian village and we're standing shoulder to shoulder, hand to hand, with Palestinian people who wish to have peace with Israelis. And in that way, where a lot of Palestinians are seeing that there are other Israelis, not the one who demolishes, but others who are rebuilding, and it keeps a flame of hope for a better future.
In January 2001, 53 Israeli reserve officers in the Israeli Defense Force publicly refused to serve beyond the 1967 borders. They signed a petition stating that they would not serve in the occupied territories in order to dominate, expel, starve, and humiliate an entire people. Since then, hundreds of Israeli officers and soldiers have joined the movement, Courage to Refuse. For their refusal, they have paid a heavy price, including serving jail time and being labeled traitors.
I'm an Israeli patriot, we are Israeli patriots. I served more than 25 years in the Israeli army as a major in the IDF. All of us were volunteering to do their army service in dangerous places, and we earned the right to say that the occupation doesn't serve the security of Israel. And we're doing it from our stand as a specialist for military job. We're the military. We know what provides security. And we paid with our time and energy. Some of us paid with their blood in order to keep Israel safe. And if from our point of view, as patriots, as Zionists, as officers in the Israeli army, we're saying that the occupation has nothing to do with security, we have the right to say it.
There are many American Jews who also believe it is their right to speak out against the occupation. Included among them are Jewish American rabbis. For their refusal to keep silent, they too have suffered threats and intimidation.
One part of that intimidation has been to say that any Jew who raises criticisms about a current Israeli policy is a self-hating Jew. But on the contrary, my criticisms and Tikkun Magazine's criticisms of Israeli policy flow directly from our commitment to Judaism and our love for the Jewish tradition and our insistence that it be taken seriously, not just as a bunch of empty words, but as a set of principles that we really take seriously and believe in.
The Israeli public relations machine knows that if the views and voices of Jews who disagree with its policies were to become public, it would be impossible to maintain the lie that any criticism of Israel is by definition anti-Semitic. In fact, the accusation of anti-Semitism has been Israel's most effective strategy in silencing dissent. And American journalists in particular have been targets of this tactic.
Any environment in which a journalist or any person steps forward and starts making serious criticism of Israel, of America's relationship with Israel, the unconditional support for Israel, the failure of any serious pressure to be put upon Israel by the United States to prevent the building of further settlements for Jews and Jews only on Arab land, any suggestion that the war between the Israelis and the Palestinians is a colonial war, will be met by a deafening chorus of accusations, slanderous and lying though they are, that the person who brings up that subject is in some form an anti-Semite or a racist. And this remains the constant weapon that is used.
The fact that anti-Semitism is alive and well in the world today makes it all the more important to differentiate between real anti-Semitism that needs to be condemned and opposed in its own right, and its misuse as a PR strategy. Trying to scare people into silence by conflating any criticism of Israeli policies with anti-Semitism, in fact, detracts from the very real threat that anti-Semitism does pose.
Because there are anti-Semites in the world, there are racists, and if this continued campaign of abuse against decent people, trying to shut them up by falsely accusing them of anti-Semitism, continues, the word anti-Semitism will begin to become respectable. And that is a great danger. And then the really bad guys, and they're around, there are people who want to burn synagogues, just like there are people who want to burn mosques, they'll start coming into their own.